Hello and welcome to Sundial on WLRN. I'm Luis Hernandez. Thanks so much for joining us. Well, although estimates have varied, most experts are predicting that Florida will hit its peak of coronavirus cases within the next 2 weeks. Hospitals and healthcare workers are doing their best to prepare for that surge, but there's still a possibility that medical professionals will be forced to ration care. We've seen it in Italy and elsewhere around the globe. If that happens, civil rights activists want to make sure that one of the most vulnerable populations, the disabled, won't be suffering the consequences. Joining us now is Tony DePalma. He's the Director of Public Policy for Disability Rights Florida. Tony, thanks so much for being with us.
Louis, thanks so much for having me, and especially for making space for this important discussion.
Absolutely. Also joining us is Carol Marbin Miller, Deputy Investigations Editor for the Miami Herald. Carol, always great to have you.
You too, Louis.
So, Tony, I want to start with you. You know, during this time where we're all trying to stay safe, what do you hear from families, about the challenges of protecting their loved ones, people with disabilities, people who are struggling just with change? Because sometimes a change in daily routine can actually be really disruptive and dangerous.
Right. Well, Louis, so many of the normal systems and processes that Disability Rights Florida keeps inventory of and tries to exert an advocacy influence in, you know, we're certainly affected by the pandemic, by the outbreak. The first sort of consideration that we experienced was educational entitlements, instruction from the federal government, sort of making sure that IDEA, Individuals with Disabilities Education Act protections remain in place for students with disabilities. But that's certainly not the extent of, you know, what we're trying to monitor and keep track of at the moment. These issues permeate across incarcerated populations into the provision of healthcare and emergency healthcare, into juvenile justice populations. So we're trying to keep pretty wide swath of material in front of us and to help make sure that folks with disabilities in the state are accounted for, included in these discussions, and thereafter protected.
And in a lot of cases, and families who go through this already understand, but, families with a child or someone that they're caring for, someone with a disability, you know, they require that extra care, and it could be a specialist, special schools, programs, daycares. In this world now that we're living in with social distancing, where are families finding that care and finding that assistance?
We're finding that, you know, families of people with disabilities themselves are having to turn to natural support more often and in more frequency than ever before. So whereas these educational protections we're talking about specify one-on-one aids or other types of educational accommodations that are written into an individualized education plan, given the realities of social distancing, we're seeing that we're having to sort of adjust those expectations and make sure that the underlying sort of protection that's set in place by these guarantees are, you know, maintained regardless of the social distancing.
Has it been hard to find services?
It depends what you mean services. I think it's hard for, you know, all segments of society at the moment to kind of keep service provision flowing the same that it was 3 or 4 weeks ago. But in terms of how that's breaking down on a disability specific level, our organization, Disability Rights Florida, we maintain and have maintained an intake line throughout the duration of this, and that'll continue throughout the rest of whatever this emergency takes shape as. And one of the roles that we try to provide through that intake is to make sure that folks who need to be plugged into good resources, good information, appropriate referrals are able to do so.
And you're right, there are a lot of different types of services. It depends on the family and, you know, what specifically they need, because you're talking about a wide spectrum of people and a lot of different issues. Carol, one of the concerns during this pandemic is access to adequate medical care for everyone. Again, we haven't felt the surge, but there's that concern that it could happen. And you've reported that that may put disabled individuals in a difficult position who are already, you know, require extensive health care. How could access to things like ventilators become a potential problem for them?
Many people with developmental disabilities have co-occurring medical conditions. People with Down syndrome, for example, are more prone to heart disease and heart defects, epilepsy, hypothyroidism, and really the greatest concern. They are more susceptible to infection. People who sustain neurological injuries at birth frequently have seizure disorders. Some of these health conditions leave them at greater risk if and when they contract coronavirus, especially the heart conditions, which leave them at really extreme risk. South Florida's largest safety net hospital, Jackson, is not likely to use disability or proxies for disability, such as job status or socioeconomic status, as a factor in determining access to a ventilator. But this controversy has arisen in other states. Alabama, Tennessee, Kansas, and Washington developed protocols that permitted the withholding of ventilators based upon such factors as disability. The University of Miami, which supplies many of the doctors at Jackson, seems to be adopting an objective ranking system called SOFA, or Sequential Organ Failure Assessment, which gives every patient a score based upon their likelihood of death, so long as hospitals rely on an objective criteria as opposed to subjective characteristics such as a person's worth. I think here in South Florida, we are less likely to see the rationing of care based upon discrimination.
And you spoke with Ken Goodman at UM about this. So he doesn't think that that's an issue that we're going to face in Florida?
I think the first thing is there is widespread consensus that discrimination based upon skin color, social class, religion, disability is impermissible. That is the position of most professional bioethicists, and I think you have to take that as your starting point. But one of the things that Ken said is that doctors, nurses, hospital administrators, they don't want to be faced with those kinds of tough, heart-wrenching decisions that would accompany the rationing of care. And they certainly don't want to be sued by loved ones if one of those tough choices results in a patient's death. So I think, especially at Jackson and at the hospital staffed by UM, you are less likely to see doctors faced with those kinds of invidious choices.
Carol said SOFA. SOFA is, again, Sequential Organ Failure Assessment. This is a protocol, a well-established instrument that's helps determine a patient's likelihood of dying, and it's supposed to remove the subjective considerations that doctors have when it comes to, okay, we have two patients here that we don't have enough equipment or we don't have enough supplies to help. How do we choose? And this is, again, hypothetical in this country right now, but we've seen this in other parts of the world because of coronavirus. Tony, she also mentioned some states, kind of going in a different direction on this, but there is a national push, isn't there? So that, this isn't just a state-by-state issue, that everyone everywhere is going to be treated equally.
And that's sort of the underlying premise that the push is built around. In addition to the states that Carol just mentioned, the states of Utah, Pennsylvania, and now New York have all also filed regulatory actions with the federal government for review of their state planning. Some of these states, the planning is occurring at a strictly state level. We haven't seen anything like that officially in Florida, and we're at this point unaware of whether or not those efforts will take place. The standards and guidelines that Carol mentioned that are being developed through the University of Miami and through other bioethicists in the state, it's a consideration and a conversation that's been occurring in earnest for more than a decade since H1N1 was sort of the challenge of the moment back in 2009. But we're actually not sure, if these standards get adopted, what their application is, and how the state might thereafter sort of formalize this whole process.
I'm talking with Tony DePalma, Director of Public Policy for Disability Rights Florida. We're also talking with the Miami Herald's Carol Marvin Miller. And if you're a parent of a disabled child or a caretaker, share any challenges you're facing amidst this pandemic, find us on Facebook or Twitter at WLRN Sundial. You can always email us, sundial@wlrnnews.org. Tony, you know, coming back to this idea, this question of, you know, the challenges that hospitals are facing, it's not something that, and this is why we're having this conversation right now, not something we heard a lot about, is the fact that, again, you have a portion of the population, people dealing with numerous disabilities right now, and not wanting for them to be pushed to the side and forgotten in a time like this. But what are you hearing from doctors or hospitals, anybody, any healthcare official about, you know, how they view this particular issue and what they're trying to do? I know doctors I've talked to, they're all trying to say they want to save everybody, but there is a fear that a surge is coming. There is a fear that we may not be ready for it.
Well, Lewis, you know, that sort of notion, you know, that doctors are good actors that exist as a profession to help people, you know, that is central to healthcare delivery in this country in so many important regards. And we have no information or belief that, you know, that underlying notion has changed in any regard as the medical community is sort of considering these issues. Luckily, these issues aren't having to be considered uniquely by the medical community. On March 28th, the U.S. Health and Human Services Office of Civil Rights issued guidance specifically directing that the relevant disability rights laws in the country. We're talking about the Americans with Disabilities Act, the Rehabilitation Act, and a relevant portion of the Affordable Care Act. All of those laws remain intact, the same as they did before the crisis and the same as they will after the crisis. These laws are non-negotiable, and these laws sort of, you know, set the expectations for how this entire process and the duration of this crisis will ensue.
Carol, you know, the governor speaks every day about the different things that the state is doing to make sure that we are as best prepared, but we're also doing everything we can, you know, to protect ourselves. Not a topic discussed that often, though. I'm wondering what you're hearing from folks in Tallahassee, you know, to make sure that those protections are in place.
It is really hard to say how disabled people are faring in Florida under the threat of coronavirus, because the DeSantis administration has been remarkably untransparent. We do know that one disabled person from Broward County has died from coronavirus. We know that three others living in group homes in Miami-Dade have been hospitalized with COVID. Those numbers seem surprisingly low to me. I mean, just by virtue of how this thing is affecting people in the general population. We know that other vulnerable groups in Florida, particularly prison inmates, juveniles in lockup, elders in nursing homes and ALFs, we are having tremendous difficulty gaining information about their status, homes where coronavirus is present, how people in those homes are faring. And so I would not be surprised if the numbers are higher for disabled people as well. The other issue is testing. Florida has been very slow and very reluctant to deploy widespread testing within institutions. And my suspicion is that's true within group homes and congregate facilities for disabled people as well.
Again, we're talking about the challenges we're facing right now with the coronavirus in this pandemic. The question of, you know, making sure that we have enough supplies, enough of everything to take care of everybody. But one particular group of people, one part of our population that we really need to make sure that we're not pushing to the side in this are those folks with disabilities, and the concern that in this fight to protect people, that hopefully we are not forgetting them and we're making sure that everyone is getting equal care. We've been talking with the Miami Herald's Carol Marvin Miller. Carol, thank you so much. I really appreciate the time.
Thanks, Lewis.
Also, we're talking with Tony DePalma. He's the Director of Public Policy for Disability Rights Florida. And Tony, you know, I wanted to come back to, you know, something that Carol had said about this particular administration. But, you know, help us understand, you know, the programs that Florida provides right now in helping parents and caretakers. Your assessment of the way Florida handles that, and do you think that it's enough?
Well, Lewis, you know, I certainly believe that the state of Florida in large measure has met the responsibilities in the moment head on. I believe that different portions of state government are providing relevant, vital information, hopefully in an accessible and inclusive manner to vulnerable populations, and especially the vulnerable populations that Carol was explaining. Again, you know, it's interesting. One thing I keep coming back to is, you know, all of society at the moment is socially distanced, and we're all having to kind of adjust and look to different modes of communication and trying to, you know, understand how life sort of has changed. In this regard, people with disabilities have been communicating and remaining in touch through these accessible modes of communication for some time. They're trailblazers in this regard. And so, you know, at the same time that we're looking to safeguard people with disabilities, we also have to make space to acknowledge that it's people with disabilities in the state and in the nation that have helped, you know, forge a way for us to stay in touch even when we're distant.
Do you, by the way, get the feeling that because we, you know, when we talk to researchers, there's still a lot of questions about this virus, but that there's an effort to understand how this particular virus is impacting the community, you know, with folks with disabilities, that we're following, that we're counting the numbers of how many people are infected, how many die, and how it affects them in particular?
That's certainly an obligation, I believe, that the state has to, you know, provide as public information. You know, to Carol's point, we are seeing that there's a lack of transparency in some of the reporting that comes out in this regard. I believe there'll be a moment in time when this is all in the rearview mirror where our state government and medical communities will have a chance to do a review of how everything went, you know, after the fact. But while the crisis is upon us, I think it's incumbent on all portions of this discussion to remember that implicit and hopefully never explicit biases against individuals with disabilities govern how this care is coordinated and the level of care that individuals receive.
And Tony, before we finish up, if you have a family, a caretaker right now who's got a question, a concern, you know, they're experiencing some challenge right now, where could they go? What advice would you give them?
I would tell anyone in the state with a disability or loved ones of people with disabilities to refer to our organization, Disability Rights Florida. And our website is disabilityrightsflorida.org. It explains different ways to get in contact and let us know how things are going or what we can do to help and look into issues that might be experienced. But there's no shortage of other very important, very useful resources and information at the moment. And we can help plug people in crises into those resources as best we're able.
And we'll make sure to share that website on our social media as well. Again, Tony DePalma, Director of Public Policy for Disability Rights Florida. Tony, thanks so much.
Thanks, Lewis, and thanks, Carol.
And again, yes, we heard earlier from Miami Herald's Carol Marvin Miller. You could see her story on our social media at WLRN Sundial. Well, still to come, how are you going to celebrate Easter, Ramadan, or Passover this year? We have a panel conversation with faith leaders coming up next. Welcome back to Sundial on WLRN. Well, this time of year is normally a celebration for Muslims, Christians, and Jews around the world. With Passover, Easter, and Ramadan celebrations starting in the coming days, people are normally preparing for family seders, Easter prayer services, and gatherings at their local mosques. But the coronavirus pandemic has upended everything, including how we observe our faith. We've gathered a panel of faith leaders to talk about this. First up, we have Rabbi Alvin Berkin, former Rabbi Emeritus of Tree of Life Synagogue in Pittsburgh, and now V et Adventura, a senior living community. Rabbi Berkin, it's such a pleasure. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Also joining us is Father Frank O'Loughlin, a Catholic priest in Lake Worth who works directly with farm workers in Palm Beach County. Father O'Loughlin, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
And also joining us is Dr. Khalid Minhas, Public Affairs Director for Ahmadiyya Muslim Community in Hallandale Beach. He's also a cardiologist at Jackson North and Jackson Main Hospitals. You know what? I'm going to make sure I got that right. Yeah, in Hallandale Beach. Dr. Minhas, thank you so much for being with us today. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
So I wanted to kind of ask all of you briefly, you know, what this time of year represents for you and your followers, usually. Put aside the pandemic and just tell me what these holiday seasons represent, what they mean to you, what they mean to your followers. Rabbi Berkin, let me start with you.
So in the last couple of years, there was a Pew study of Jewish people and their level of observance. And it turned out that the Passover Seder is considered to be the most prevalent Jewish institution that exists. Over 70% of Jews indicated that they were touched by the Seder, were involved in a Seder, went to a Seder. It's a remarkable statistic, and it tells us how significant Passover and its Seder is to our people and has been over the centuries.
Yeah. Father O'Loughlin, I mean, the Easter holiday, this is a very important time of year.
But let me stay with the Seder. I have not had a year in which it hasn't been one of the most significant moments in my year. It's when we talk about being liberated by God, right? And it's when we talk about being sent out as liberators for others. It's a huge debt in my life, because the renewal of the annual Seder is priceless.
Mm. And Dr. Minhas, for you, this time of year, what does it mean?
Well, as you all know, the fasting exists one way or the other in all the, not only the major Abrahamic three religions, but in other religions as well. And Ramadan is the major month of fasting in the faith of Islam. That is 30 days of fasting from dawn to sunset. When Muslims get up in the morning, eat their morning meal, and then at dawn, and then abstain from eating and drinking, and spend their time in praying, and also serve the fellow mankind, these services are enhanced. So this is that blessed month that will be starting soon.
You know, with this pandemic, things change day to day. And I'm wondering, when did you start having conversations, you know, within your organization, between the leaders and the followers, about how these holidays may change? When did you start talking about the fact that, well, maybe we can't hold service, maybe we're going to have to, you know, make some changes, bring people online, that we're going to have to cancel certain events? Dr. Minhas, I'll start with you. When did those conversations begin?
Well, it's as members of Ahmadiyya Muslim community, it's one of the oldest Muslim organizations in the United States since 1920s. In compliance with the guidelines of CDC as well as with the local government, we have stopped gathering in our mosque at Hallandale Beach. But we have continued our online gatherings as well as classes, Sunday schools for our children through Zoom and other technical measures that the technical tools that are available to stay connected with each other, especially during these times of these tough times. And it's been going on for the past couple of weeks since the city of Hallandale Beach has suggested and given us the instructions to close the gatherings. But the mosque is open for many. The mosque stays open for essential services. We do yearly blood drives that I can talk later a little bit for any other essential services for local community. For that purpose, our mosque is always available, has been available, and is still available.
Father O'Loughlin, what have you heard from folks about the fact that we have to practice this social distancing? And so now, you know, maybe perhaps, you know, masses now are, all, you know, online, or, you know, that you can't go to mass because there's a danger.
Right. All of the liturgies and services and so on are being live streamed on the parish websites, right? On Facebook Live, on YouTube channels, and parish prayer groups are meeting, studying the Bible and so on Zoom and FaceTime. But that's not the really wonderful thing that has happened is how people have adapted and how they have, you know, all through my life, I've been a priest forever. All through my life, the great moments have come when new emerging groups take up the challenge of being the church. Right? And right now we're seeing that the kind of people who on a Sunday morning used to minister Holy Communion to the big congregations, all of those people now are reorganized, and they have their ministry of communion now is done with an enhanced sense. They're on the telephone, right? They're calling the nursing homes, and they're calling the assisted living, and they're calling patients inside the hospital, and they're communing in that way. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and there's something to this that I want to get to a little bit later on, is that in moments of tragedy or difficulty, I wonder how faith plays a role, how people respond, but I'll get to that in a little bit. Rabbi Birkin, I wondered with you, did you get any pushback? Because I know there are people, listen, they want to be, you know, in the physical building because it's an important part of their, you know, communion with God.
You know, it's an interesting question. My sense is no. Because we really are responding to national and international norms. My son, who's the rabbi at the Aventura Turnberry Jewish Center, is actually working harder than he ever did before. He's giving sermons to empty congregations, but it's being live streamed. They're conducting the services completely online, and he's getting thousands of people who are checking it out, whereas in real life, he would have probably only gotten a few hundred. So from that perspective, it's fascinating.
It is. It really is fascinating to see how we do adapt, and it is an interesting world that we live in. We've been hearing from folks about how they are viewing the upcoming holidays in this world of social distancing. And we heard from Gina Trotz from Miramar. She's 64 and a Lutheran, and she tells us a little bit about how she's celebrating the Holy Week.
Because of the lockdown, our church has been conducting virtual services for the last month. The church service on Easter Sunday is typically a very joyous occasion, with the choir belting out the Hallelujah chorus at the end. This year, we'll be singing along from our beds. The message is the same this year as it has been from the beginning, but it is particularly relevant at this time when the whole world is experiencing pain and suffering. I believe that this pandemic is intended to be our reset button.
A reset button. I keep hearing people tell me that things are going to change after this, that everybody's going to change, the world is going to change. You know what, Dr. Minhas? Is that the case? Is this a reset button? How do you tell people, how do you tell your followers, you know, what perhaps this means in their lives? What is the purpose? Why God would want this to be?
Well, I wear two hats. One is that I serve as a public affairs director. Second, I'm a physician serving fellow mankind as a physician. And one verse that really intrigues me since this whole thing is happening and transpiring in front of us is the verse in Talmud that God states that whosoever saves a life as if he had saved the entire mankind. This is in the Old Testament book of Talmud, chapter 4, verse 9. Same verse is repeated in the Holy Quran in the chapter 5, verse 33. In exact same words where God states that he has prescribed this to the children of Israelites. And this is where I think this pandemic is teaching us as mankind that how united we need to stand, that the God who talked to Moses, he talked to Jesus, he talked to Prophet Muhammad, may God have blessings on all of them, that the fundamental service of man is to serve the fellow mankind in addition to praying to God. And this is where we all faiths, not only the Abrahamic faiths, but the other faiths, we all come from one Lord. And this is an opportunity. This virus is teaching us a lot of lessons. It's humbling us at the same time as teaching us lessons that we got to get together and we got to get our act together and stand together as united, as one mankind, figure it out, and then beat the enemy that is that is challenging us as mankind, the best creation of God Almighty.
You know, Father O'Loughlin, I wonder how many times you get people who come up to you and say, why is this happening? Why would God let this happen? How do you talk to people about this?
Well, the truth is that what we say is our faith is, as they say, incarnational. But, you know, if I see the face of God, I'm going to see it in you, my sister and brother. Right? If I show the face of God, it will be in my service to you, my sisters and brothers. Yes? That's our faith. As we witnessed this week with these skeptics, it's easy to transfer over into superstition and magic. Yeah?
Yeah. Rabbi
Burt. To have people defying the ordinary science in the matter.
Yeah. Rabbi Birkin, do you find in these times, in moments of tragedy or difficulty, people either embrace their faith more or they start to question, they start to doubt? Because, I mean, this is a difficult time.
Yeah, of course. And we're living actually in a community that has a tremendous number of Holocaust survivors. So from that perspective, it kind of makes one seriously give serious thought to God's role in all of this. I personally like to think of it as being a situation where this is not God manipulating or controlling it, but rather the contrary, that God steps back and lets us run this world. And we're doing a pretty bad job of it.
Again, we've been hearing from a lot of folks about how they are approaching this upcoming season. Again, the month of April, we have three big religious holidays, and how people are celebrating. And again, at a time of social distancing, you know, how that's changed our lives, because a lot of it now has to be done online. We can't be in a building, all of us together. We have to stay at home and stay distant from each other. We heard from Monica Munoz. She's from Miami, a Catholic and a mother of two. And she told us her family's Easter celebration will not change despite coronavirus.
We'll do an Easter egg hunt at home with whatever candy we still have. And we'll have some special messages inside the eggs. Like,
tonight you pick movie night, or you pick what's for lunch, or maybe even your turn to do dishes.
Still going to be celebrating, just doing it at home, doing it with family, and again, keeping that social distancing. I wanted to, before we go to break here, real quickly, Father O'Loughlin, I want to start with you. And, you know, as I mentioned before, and we report this constantly, the state is on shutdown and people are asked to stay at home, except for essential services. And religious services are considered essential. Do you think, though, that that shouldn't be the case, that these should be non-essential? We need to tell people you could still worship, but don't go to a church, don't go to a synagogue, don't go to a mosque. Do it at home because that's safer. Do you think that we should make that a law?
Absolutely. And I think that there are going to be terrific repercussions to the fact that the governor has not been straight about this. Of course, we must keep another six. Can I just say this? Isolation has terrible consequences. But the way you fix it is not by going into some kind of a group right now. Unemployed, anxiety-ridden, hungry people up in Lake Worth, where I am, are going to produce terrible domestic violence, right? That is the egg hunt, but the family sounds wonderful. So many people are already in domestic violence shelters that they are overcrowded, and that there has been special funding, right? So they're being put into motels right now, not a long-term policy. At the center, I have 1,000 telephone connections. And twice a day, we message the migrant indigenous families, right? People who don't speak English, probably speak very little Spanish, and so, the people of the workforce. And we make some kind of an attempt to solve their isolation. We speak to them in their own Mayan languages, right? Half a dozen of them.
Yeah.
Right? But they are two and three families to a house, right? They're dismissed from their jobs in restaurants and in cleaning and so on. They're trying to hold things together with rice and beans and corn that we give them. But can you imagine the desperation there? And can you imagine the potential for domestic violence and so?
Yeah.
Now that's an authentic Easter morning event in our day.
Right. Right.
Circumstances. Let's break down that isolation. Let's make be a holy communion with one another.
You bring up some fascinating points. I got to take a break here for just a moment, but there's something really interesting that you brought up, Father, that I want to bring back to the rest of the panel. Again, we're talking with a religious panel today as we are coming up on Easter, Passover, and Ramadan, and hearing from you as to how you're celebrating these holidays in a time of social distancing. More on this conversation coming up next. Welcome back to Sundial on WLRN. Let's continue our conversation with faith leaders during this global crisis. We've gathered a panel of faith leaders to talk about this. We have Rabbi Alvin Berkin, former Rabbi Emeritus of Tree of Life Synagogue in Pittsburgh, now at Via Adventura, a senior living community. Also, Father Frank O'Loughlin, a Catholic priest in Lake Worth. He spends a lot of time working with farm workers in Palm Beach County. And Dr. Khalid Minhas, Public Affairs Director for Ahmadiyya Muslim Community in Hallandale Beach. By the way, he's also a cardiologist, as he mentioned, at Jackson North and Jackson Maine Hospitals. I wanted to come back to something that Father O'Loughlin just said. Rabbi Berkin, I'll start with you. This time of you know, social distancing can also bring up a lot of other challenges. We're talking about people who may be in abusive homes, people who are dealing with addictions or other difficult challenges in their lives. You know, the social isolation can accentuate these problems. And so one of the things that, you know, being part of a church or synagogue or mosque is that you can reach out for help at any time. But in these days when you can't go, how do you connect? How is the synagogue connecting with followers right now to make sure that in the time of social isolation, they could get the help they need?
Thank God for Alexander Graham Bell. We are connected, and it's up to us really as institutions to make sure that people know that and how to reach out to us, and we have to reach out to them as well and try to be there for each other. I mean, the sense of community for the Jewish people is very, very powerful, and the notion that Passover is now going to be observed in this bizarre fashion only gives bona fides to the fact that we have to be together as family units, as a community, as a neighborhood, and to really be there for each other.
Dr. Minhas, you said that some services are still available, that the mosque is still open for some services. Like what?
So during the months of Ramadan, as we worship God to enhance our spirituality, at the same time to enhance that bond with God Almighty, we have to serve His creation, serve the neighborhoods, wherever Muslims reside. And in Hallandale Beach, we have a very close bond with the city of Hallandale Beach and Hepburn Center, where we this center is for the elderly and the less fortunate. And we are collecting and donating supplies, the groceries, the goods, the supplies with our Ahmadiyya Muslim Youth Association, not only in Hallandale Beach and Miami area, but also in our other 65 chapters in the entire country, and reaching out to the neighborhoods and wherever their needs are. The Ahmadiyya Muslim Youth Association is reaching out and serving. In Miami area, we also have Broward Outreach Center, as well as it's a sister organization of Miami Rescue Mission. We've been collaborating with them for the past 10 years now, at least, if not more. And we are reaching out there with the supplies, with anything that those centers are requiring, we are serving those. And finally, Humanity First is our relief organization that serves the fellow Americans with meals as well as hygiene products. And we've been doing those activities all over the country as well.
Yeah. Again, we're talking today with a panel of spiritual leaders talking about the fact that we have Easter, Ramadan, and Passover this month. But in a day of social distancing, in a time of social distancing, is how are we going to celebrate these holidays? How are we going to, celebrate our faith? Well, a lot of people are doing it online. And as we actually just heard a moment ago, thank goodness for Alexander Graham Bell, that there is a telephone, that we could still communicate with each other, and we could still celebrate these holidays. We've been hearing from a lot of folks about how they're going to be celebrating the holidays from home, staying distant away from each other, staying safe. One of the things that came up, that's come up, and I don't know if any of you have experienced this yet, but I want your thoughts on this. Father O'Loughlin, I want to start with you. One of the challenges is that when somebody becomes sick, they have to keep everyone away from that person. And family can't get close. And there have been cases where people will die. And again, family cannot be there. And funeral services have had to change the way they do business, again, to protect people. I wonder if you've run into this situation, or if not, how you talk to people about how to handle the fact that sometimes you can't be with the ones you love when you want to be there the most.
My friend, who is a congregational minister, loves to care for people in hospice, said to me, that is what chaplaincy is. Right? It's when there's nothing that can be done, you are present. And you might say that that speaks to all of us in the religious community, that we have to find the way to be present. Some priests I know have still continued to go in to be with people, and hospitals do admit them to the dying, right? But with all kinds of precautions. And so sometimes it's been quite difficult. But you take it for granted, if you're a Catholic, that they will be with you if you're dying. And that is it. Some of the nurses have been spectacular in using the phone so that the people who are dying have been able to have an outside contact. But in general, it has been toward the nursing homes, the assisted living facilities, and so on, that the churches have been able to direct, organizing their own telephone trees and then being present in that way.
Yeah,
it's the very definition of what we are. We call, like I said to you, we call ourselves with an old Greek word, parish, right? And and it represents the status of sojourners who are accompanying one another through these pilgrimages.
Yeah, Rabbi Birkin,
Judaism has an interesting perspective because it really tells us directly that pikuach nefesh, the saving of a human life, is paramount to everything and anything else. And so if you're not being with a dying one, which is a horrible, horrible situation, results in lives being protected and saved, then that's the direction we have to go in for the living. So it kind of takes a very complicated issue and boils it down to a value system.
Mm. And Dr. Minhas, I mean, again, you're in an interesting situation because, again, you're also a cardiologist. You're at Jackson North, at Jackson Main Hospitals, so that you're seeing this from two different perspectives. But I wondered what you're seeing, within the hospitals and how they're handling this. And again, how do you talk to a family and say you can't be with your loved one at this time?
Yeah, it is very unique and unprecedented situation. And I can only imagine how difficult it is for the families to be on the other end. As organization, we've been encouraged and actually been reminded repeatedly to make more phone calls than what we usually have been doing in the past during these times, to stay connected with the families, giving them the updates. And that's what we've been doing. Our nurses and doctors in the hospital, trying to reach out to the families, giving them daily updates of their loved ones. It is a very difficult situation. It's easier said than done to be a family member at home and having loved ones in the hospital. not knowing what are they going through. But at the same time, there's a verse in the Holy Quran that states that obey God and obey the messenger and obey the authority among you. And it is the faith, whatever faith we believe in, that helps us during these tough times, during these trying times, that gives us this inner peace, that we go towards God and try to seek that peace in ourselves, establishing that relationship, that we live in this world, and enhancing that relationship and trying to comfort ourselves during these tough times through our faith.
And, you know, in these times, I mean, in a regular time, you know, that's one of the things about these holidays is a big part of it is also for Jews and Catholics, Christians, Muslims, you know, that service, community service, service to others. And I'm wondering, in these times, though, how are you able to continue to offer that service when, again, it could be dangerous to connect with other people right now? Dr. Khalid, I start with you.
So as I was mentioning about the community services, there are norms and guidelines provided by the local authorities and the CDC. And as the rabbi was mentioning about the sanctity of life is the utmost and most important thing that we need to look towards. Practicing, if we are told to practice physical distance, we should follow those guidelines. And under the provided guidelines, you still can do a lot of things. For example, we all know that the blood is something that is always required in the hospitals. And there is we are hearing about the need for blood. And Ahmadiyya Muslim community has been doing this blood drive since 2000, yearly blood drive since 2011 at the 10th anniversary of the heinous crime of 9/11. To collect blood to save lives. And so far, we have collected every year. To date, we have collected around 60,000 pints of blood, and every pint of blood can save 3 lives. So up to 180 to 200,000 lives have been saved. But this year, in collaboration with American Red Cross and its Sleeves Up campaign, Muslims for Life initiative that I'm talking about, of Ahmadiyya Muslim community, we have started doing this campaign earlier. And we will be doing this in Hallandale Beach. And with the permission of the city of Hallandale Beach, we'll be doing this in our mosque with the guidelines provided, safety guidelines provided, and collect the blood. And there are other ways we can continue doing things following the instructions and guidelines provided by the local authorities.
So we could still give, we could still help, but again, follow guidelines. Rabbi Birkin, for you as well, I mean, you know, what you talk with your followers about, how they can continue that service, but do so safely. And just touch on just a little bit of the fact that, do people feel stronger in their faith in a time like this?
I think for some people that's definitely the case, and others the opposite. You know, we are living in a free society, which of course is the theme of our Passover, which begins this evening. The idea of the human freedom is also very sacred and something that has been held aloft for all kinds of peoples. And many different kinds of walks of life. So all in all, we're going to be talking about this to our grandchildren. Our grandchildren will be talking about it to their grandchildren. And we just have to make sure that we're behaving ourselves in the most appropriate way.
Yeah, we will have stories to share for generations. Father O'Loughlin, I'll finish with you. Again, how do you preach service in a time of, having to protect yourself?
One of the things we've been trying to do is have people appreciate the medical personnel. And we've been trying to contact the nurses and so on and affirm them in this extraordinary service that they're being required to do. But can I say one other thing?
Yeah, briefly, go ahead.
The horrors of, that we look at a time like the Holy Week and so on make so much sense to us. The Passover celebration makes so much sense to us because we're living in a place, a kind of lunacy of cruelty, right? The state this week told that the workers in my parish, right, told them, you're indispensable.
Yes.
Right? We do not want to live without your work, right?
And
but you may not have so much as a driver's license.
Yeah, I have to jump in. I apologize only because of time. And you're right. We talked about this yesterday. We talked about immigration. I've been talking with Rabbi Alvin Birkin of Viet Aventura, Senior Living Community Father Frank O'Loughlin, Catholic priest in Lake Worth, and Dr. Khalid Minhas, again, Public Affairs Director for Ahmadiyya Muslim Community. I thank you all so much for your time and sharing with us. Have a wonderful holiday as you celebrate this year. That is our program for this Wednesday, April 8th. Again, we'll air tonight at 8 o'clock. You can find us online at WLRN.org. Thanks for listening.